They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, joining us today, we have Tyler Birding. Tyler is an attorney in California who has an amazing blog, condoissues.com, and I highly recommend that you check it out. Tyler has been litigating construction defect and all kinds of problems for the last 40-some years. Tyler, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Tyler, my regular listeners hear me often say that housing today seems to have been built with cardboard and scotch tape. And so they write to me and they laugh about it. But when I went to your website and the perils, I was looking at the perils of hidden damage. The photo there literally was cardboard.
It's like cardboard. Builders over the last few years have tried to, it's not entirely about cutting costs, I suppose, but as much as trying to be efficient and get things built quickly using different methods and materials to do it, some of them innovative. But some of those materials, if the tradesmen aren't trained properly to use them, require more precision than the industry can sometimes provide. And what we get is a building which is not built waterproof in many cases. And so we have leaks and other issues that often can't be seen readily just from the outside and often don't leak into the building, into the units themselves. It stays in the walls and causes some of those problems that you saw in that publication.
Well, you've long been sounding the alarm for underfunding and for conversion properties because you say that these, especially condominiums, start becoming condominiums with no reserves, no funding in place. They've been rentals for a whole long time. But the two articles that you had on your website, the one where the balcony collapsed, and
yes,
the one where the stairwell collapsed. I mean, both of those are relatively new buildings. They're not that old.
That's right. And those both of those, by the way, are apartment buildings. But apartment buildings aren't built any differently than the condominium buildings that are built to be sold new as condominiums. And, of course, condominium conversions, are just apartment buildings that have been previously rented. So, no, they weren't that old, and one of the problems of not putting a building together with enough proper waterproofing is that we get moisture trapped in these wall cavities, or in the case of Berkeley, the balcony cavity, and it stays there and doesn't necessarily leak through so that someone would observe a leak. It just stays in the cavity and often is water vapor or moisture and attacks the wood that's in there. And in the case of Berkeley, the balcony supports. And in the case of the other property in Folsom, the beam where the staircase was attached, those things were covered up and enclosed in areas where they couldn't be readily inspected by anybody who be looking at them until they fail. And in these two cases, tragically, they failed with and killed people.
And the staircase looked like it was made of concrete.
The staircase treads were concrete. The supporting structure was steel, but it was screwed on to a wooden beam at the top, which held it in place. And it was the beam that rotted and allowed the steel supporting structure to fall.
So should we be rethinking construction material that we're using? I mean, everything seems to be plastic, cheap, disposable, slap it on, and away we go. We're not far off when I say cardboard and scotch tape.
Well, one of the problems is that the kind of buildings we're talking about, four story buildings that are built today as multi-housing properties, apartments and condos, are built largely of wood framing and other wood components that are part of the framing structure. And it could be real wood, or it could be pressed wood, or wood chips that are pressed into panels. These buildings are built largely of wood. They may be coated with a stucco material or put some other kind of siding over the wood, but internally, they're largely wood. And wood, when it gets wet, especially when it stays wet over time, rots. And when it rots, it loses its ability to hold up the building. And we have the kind of failures that you see in those two instances.
You made the comment in one of your articles that the government and the press are largely ignoring all of the failures, because there are a lot of building failures out there, aren't there?
Well, we just drafted a piece of legislation for California that we're hoping to get carried next year, which is going to require much more intensive inspections of the structural components of a building every, say, 5 or 7 years by people who know what they're looking for, structural engineers, architects, including perhaps opening up portions of the building and inspecting these elements that are not readily visible. And so because we know that we're going to need support for that, we've done a little research. And we've already found about 30 instances in the last couple of years where not only buildings have failed, but they've injured or killed somebody in the process. Had no idea that much existed out there until we began doing our research to back up this legislation. So, yes, there have been quite a number of failures. I think it takes something like this Berkeley tragedy, where 6 very innocent young people were killed, to bring it to the attention, to the point where the press will pay enough attention to it, and more to the point where the building officials and the legislature will begin to pay attention to the causes.
How much would it cost? I mean, we're talking additional cost for hiring structural engineers and all of that. If we've got condos that are not adequately funded as it is, are they going to be able to make the necessary repairs if they have to get a structural engineer? Because I'm sure they're not going to be cheap, right? And then they're going to have to make the repairs as well.
Here's the thing. If they don't do this investigation where they look inside the wall cavities, you know, we're not talking about taking all the stucco off. We're talking about random inspections in enough places so that the engineer can evaluate the condition of the building. If they don't do that, then we're going to continue to have the kind of problems that, not just like Berkeley, where you have a real tragedy, but we have lots of buildings that have that kind of damage going on over a period of 20 or 30 years, that eventually the owners who are there at that time are going to have to pay for it.
Right, no, I agree.
And they're not prepared for it. So we think it's much better that we begin to probe sooner and discover these kinds of problems while there's something that can be done about it, either to stop it or to save money over time to pay for it than to find it at the last minute when there is no other way to fund it than to go to the members for a large special assessment. The inspections are, we haven't priced them. We don't know. I use those kind of inspectors in litigation, basically forensic inspections. And I think if you're talking about spreading it out over, say, 200 units over a period of 5 years to save for it, I don't believe that on an annual basis it will result in a phenomenally large sum of money for any of them. I think it will result in having to put some extra money in reserves to be able to pay for this when the time comes to do it. But the alternative is completely unacceptable. And it's not like you can choose not to do it, because when it gets so bad and has accumulated to such a point that the repairs absolutely have to be done, if they're not done, the local building departments will put a red tag on these buildings and people will no longer be able to live in them. So it's really a choice of saving the money, inspecting early, or finding out at the last minute when you have to go for a large special assessment that, in truth, many people can't afford, and run the risk of having to vacate the building.
What about...
And I think that's overstating the case.
No, it's not. It absolutely isn't. I was just wondering, you know, one of the big concerns has been that associations are not adequately funded, they don't have the money, the homeowners don't have the money, we've been going through some financial hard times lately. The last few years have not been great, and you've heard about a lot of foreclosures and people trying to put aside money or save money or cut corners. How important, I mean, why is it that local municipal governments are not doing a better job of inspecting these buildings before they're allowing them to be habited?
The problem goes, the reason I wrote that blog post about Berkeley the way I did, and focusing on training and getting appropriate labor, because I think that's really the root of the problem, and I'll get to the building inspection in a minute. The root of the problem is that buildings are going up so fast, especially when demand is high, like it is now, and developers can sell anything they can put on the market. They want to build it and get a lot of buildings done quickly.
Yeah.
There isn't enough labor, trained labor, to go around to satisfy the demand. So they get labor that isn't adequately trained. They find people who are laborers and they make them into carpenters or they make them into plumbers. They may know a little bit about it, but they don't know enough about how to put an assembly together to keep the building waterproof. So we're building buildings at a time of high demand, but the labor pool can't meet the demand. When you have people who are not trained properly to do a simple waterproofing, at a joint where water can get in and rot the wood beams and structures inside, it doesn't matter how many inspectors are out on the job. They would literally have to watch. You'd have to have an inspector for every laborer on the job watching him do it 8 hours a day. And it's not going to happen. The cities and counties don't have the funding to provide that level of inspection for other reasons that we could spend a whole program on talking about. They just don't. So they can't put that kind of inspection in the field. Developers have foremen who do keep and watch on some of these things. But keep in mind that a lot of this work has been done by subcontractors, not the developers' own people. The inspection that is brought out to these projects isn't necessarily there on a daily basis. There to kind of check on the progress of the work, maybe to spot check some of the areas. They find things, but they're not there every day, 8 hours a day, watching the workers put things together. And if you don't have people who are sufficiently trained, they're going to make mistakes. And those kind of mistakes are the kind of thing that led to the problem in Berkeley. That wasn't a complicated piece of construction. That was fairly simple and fairly routine. It just wasn't put together properly. And that goes to the carpenter or the subcontractor who was doing it. And yes, the building inspectors need to spend more time on it. But the real problem, I think, is not having enough trained people to do this work in the first place.
Well, I think that I've noticed here in Fairfax County, that the county is doing less and less and less. Of course, they keep increasing taxes, and you find out that they're giving themselves $20,000 annual raises, and then they're whining about not having enough money. But if we're building junk, literally, we are building junk. I mean, right where I'm sitting right now, we have these almost $1 million townhouses going up, and they're put together with what looks like toothpicks.
Well,
you know, yeah. It literally is. It's toothpicks, and up it goes.
I will say this. In 40 years of litigating failed construction, and that's why I can write about the things I do, because I know how buildings fail and why they fail, and I spent my entire career understanding that. The designs that are provided for these buildings are usually pretty good. We don't normally find a great deal of design mistakes in failed buildings. In other words, the architect who drew the plans knew what he was doing. The construction is conventional enough so that he can put together details that any decent carpenter or contractor should be able to understand. So we're not finding a lot of design errors. There are such as trying to make a building so architecturally interesting that it's difficult to assemble properly, or using materials that are not suited for the climate that you're building the building in, those kinds of things. But for the most part, the bulk of the problems that we find are due to the building not being constructed in accordance with the architect's design or good building practice. That's what happened in Berkeley. And I think the building in Folsom, we don't know as much about it, but my guess is it wasn't maintained as well as it could have been, and also probably wasn't assembled in a way that could keep the water out of those wood elements. So I don't know that we've got a real design problem. And what you see going up there in Fairfax County, while it is stick-built probably and is made out of wood,
yeah,
it should be able to be built so that it doesn't leak moisture under the skin of the building. And that is pretty conventional stuff, but when we find the mistakes, it's usually because somebody didn't know what they were doing when they were putting it together.
Well, I look at these things go up, and it's like they almost go up overnight. One minute you've got some woods, and the next minute there's a big yellow cardboard sign saying there's a hearing here, and then the trees are gone, and then the sticks come. You know, there are all these big sticks and the signs, and they're up in no time, Tyler. No time. They're overnight almost. They look nice.
That's what I meant when I said they're striving for, I guess you could say, efficiency. Let's get them up quickly because the demand is there. Right now, I don't know how things are selling on the East Coast, but they're selling like crazy out here on the West Coast, and I suspect the demand is there also. So the faster they get them up, the faster they can get them on the market or get them rented at their apartment. And so there's pressure on the builders to get it done quickly. It's not like a custom home. We have custom homes going up around where I live. Sometimes take 2 years to build a single home.
Yeah.
Because but the kind of multifamily housing that has the problems we're talking about is usually put up very quickly.
Yeah. No, they do. They go up, and they're almost disposable. They don't plan on being around for a whole long time, I don't think.
Well, I've said in things I've written about before.
Yeah, that you have.
They have a service life.
Yeah.
Nobody thinks of a building having a service life. They think of a roof having a service life, 20 years. They think of paint, 5 years. But nobody thinks the entire project has a service life of, call it 40 years, 50 years. But if they do, often they do, because they aren't maintained or able to be maintained in a way that prolongs the life. And when we get to that 30 or 40 or 50-year point, so much damage is found or has been deferred or has been unknown that when they find it, they can't raise the money to fix it. And when that happens, the life of the building is over, and the owners have to figure out something else to do with it.
Well, in one of your articles, you say when the cost of the repairs exceeds the value and or the equity they have, you know, the owners have no equity, but we keep selling these things as assets. They're your nest egg. You're going to have something when you're done. It's putting money in your pocket. Don't pay somebody else's mortgage off for them. But the reality is that it's not working out that way in some cases.
Well, what I'm kind of waiting for is for the lenders to wake up.
But we've been talking about the lenders as well.
Yeah, well, you see, when I say the owners have no equity, it's not that the building is worthless. Often the cost of repair will be will not exceed the total value of all the units in the project, but it exceeds the equity of the owners. Who's got the rest of the equity? The lenders have the rest of the equity. And the lenders actually have more at risk than the owners do. Now, it may impact them less because they have lots of money and owners don't. But truly, the biggest piece of equity in that building is what the lenders hold. And they're not aware of what we're talking about. Because they're shielded by the owners and the obligations that the owners have to pay assessments and keep the place maintained.
They don't care, Tyler, because what happens is when you issue a mortgage to someone, you have this mortgage, you loan them $100,000 at a certain percentage interest, and you know that over the life of the mortgage, you're going to get back $600,000-$800,000, whatever it is, depending on the interest rate. But they're not going to keep it. They're not going to hang on to it. They're going to turn around and they're going to sell it. They're going to sell it at a discount. It eventually ends up the government buys it. So nobody cares. They just sort of roll it down the road.
Well, that's all true. And the mortgage industry as long as they can flip those mortgages to someone else and walk away from it, you're right. They don't care. So the people who are creating the mortgages, who are originating them, if the companies that are buying those mortgages knew more about the condition of these buildings, they would probably not buy the mortgages. But they don't know the condition of the building. The owners, the buyers, the owners who live there don't know the true condition of the building. And once they find out, then the building and the cost of repairing it becomes known, the building becomes stigmatized, and then sales freeze up, and people are stuck. When that happens, all the transactions in that project become paralyzed. And there's another phenomenon that goes on. A lot of people who live in these projects, especially the older ones, they don't want to know how bad it is. Because why? Because their interests are very short term. They plan on selling this year or next year or the year after. They don't want to know that there is a $30,000 assessment waiting for them once the true cost of repairing this building is discovered. Because if they know about it, they have to disclose it. And if they disclose it, they won't be able to sell their unit. I've run into this a number of times when I go and I suggest to people, you know, we really ought to take a closer look at what's going on with this building, because you may have damages that are way outside anything your budget, your reserve budget anticipates. I'll get pushback because they don't really want to know, because their interest is short-term, not long-term. And I can tell you that an awful lot of people in the real estate community are in the forefront of that kind of pushback, because the minute the project has that stigma on it, then it's hard to sell them. So there's a whole, I wouldn't go so far as to call it a conspiracy, but there's certainly a whole meeting of the minds about why we don't really want to investigate what's going on with these buildings. And we really don't want to know because, A, we can't sell mortgages, we can't close deals, or we won't be able to sell our unit, or we won't be able to refinance it. So the condition of the building is critical, but there's an aversion to knowing everything you need to know about it.
One of the things that you talk about is pride. You said that real craftsmen have pride in what they do. They're properly compensated, and they're trained in programs that teach construction fundamentals, how to read drawings and apply them correctly. If avoiding dangerous errors means spending more private and public funds on technical training, then it is logical that we do that. Quality construction will pay for itself in lower insurance and legal costs, less maintenance and repair expense, and greater safety for building occupants. That makes so much sense.
Well, yes.
And so
you have to ask yourself, why aren't we doing it?
I am asking myself, why aren't we doing it?
Well, first of all, in the last, call it 20 or 30 years, there's so much of an emphasis on a bachelor's degree from college that young people, many of whom really aren't equipped to make the most of a four-year degree, but would have skills that they could be trained in professions that require manual skills.
Yeah.
Carpenters, plumbers.
Right.
The building trades are full of them. When I was in high school 10 centuries ago, we had wood shop, we had metal shop, we had auto shop. Those were not just things to do because it was fun or a hobby. Those were things that identified those young people who had certain manual skills so they could be identified and then sent or guided into professions that utilize those skills at a very early age. And often the unions would have apprentice programs that would pick them up once they were identified by the schools and put them in these apprentice programs, and they would go on to become skilled and knowledgeable carpenters or plumbers or sheet metal people, whatever it was we needed. For some reason, and I'm not entirely sure what the motivation was, a lot of those programs were abandoned, and the unions aren't able, I guess, to train enough people to keep up with the demand. They still have these programs, the unions do, but the schools don't. And either high school or community college is the perfect place to teach these kind of job skills and teach these young people, train these young people in jobs that are going wanting. We don't have enough trained craftsmen to fill all the jobs that are out there, yet we're not doing it. And I think that we have to get off this idea that every young person should get a four-year college degree and go off and teach English or whatever, or be an accountant, because there's a whole lot of those people that would be a lot happier. Just look at that, just happiness. They'd be a lot happier because they would be doing something they could do really well and have a decent employment. And yes, we have to pay them well. We can't pay the minimum wage and expect that you're going to get craftsmen. Those jobs have to be rewarded. But, of course, then that's going to raise the cost of ownership of these units, these buildings as well. So it all ties together.
Yeah, but I would rather pay a little bit more at the offset and not have to keep repairing and plugging and fixing and replacing, because that is not cheap down
it's
the road.
It's not cheap, and they don't have the funding mechanism to acquire the money to do it. That's why we find these associations going so far in the hole, because they're obligated to fix things that they're not saving enough money to do it. That's the old funding dilemma that we've been talking about for years.
Yeah.
But now add to that the problem with this hidden damage issue, which nobody anticipates, even with the reserve budget. We don't have enough money in the reserves to do the things we already know about. We certainly don't have enough to deal with things they find out 30 years later. And so if we built buildings out of more quality materials using skilled labor that could really put them together well, we wouldn't have these quality control problems. And the lawyers, like me, wouldn't be the quality control people. We don't, that's not what we should be doing, but that's what we are doing.
That's what you're stuck
to. We have to identify, we're identifying defects in buildings that inspectors and foremen should have found. If we can find them, they could find them, but they're not.
We're talking to Tyler Birding from California. He's an attorney who has been litigating construction defect and all of these problems for the last 40 years, and is an expert on what goes on in these housings, in these developments, and he's long been sounding the alarm for underfunding, especially in condo conversions. So we're beginning to see things sort of fall apart and collapse. I want to talk a little bit about the staircase in Folsom. There was a picture of a 2x4 propping up a staircase because apparently the manager decided it needed something, and they'd been talking about having to make these repairs for a while. So they prop it up with a 2x4?
Yeah, well, I think the one that's propped up isn't the one that failed. The
no.
one that failed is no longer there. But now they've gone back and shored them up just to be sure that it doesn't happen again until they can get around to doing the actual repairs. That's an apartment house. If I'm the city of Folsom, as I'm sure they'll do, they're not going to let anybody use those stairs unless they are properly shored up or repaired now that this has happened. So that 2x4 you see there is probably part of that effort to shore them before they can actually implement the repairs. But those repairs are not cheap. They're probably going to have to tear out part of that landing and rebuild it in order to have something to fasten those stairs to in order to keep that from happening again. And that's what the investor or the owner of that apartment house is going to have to lay out the money to do it. There's no insurance for that kind of failure.
I'm not a construction expert, obviously, but you think that if you've got concrete steps and the concrete building, wouldn't it have, or you said there was metal, right? Metal supports. Why would they even stick wood in there? Why wouldn't they just keep going with the more durable materials?
The staircase is a prefabricated component.
Oh, it's prefab?
The steel pieces are built in a factory, and the concrete pieces are built in a factory, and they're attached together and put up onto the building as a unit that bolts to the landing at the second story. And you can, in that picture, I think you can even see some of the bolts that screw into the wood that is the base of the landing. That's not an atypical way of building stairways like that. They're prefabricated, and the building itself is not built out of steel. The building is built out of wood, but the steel support structure is, I mean, the stairway support structure is built out of steel, and it's bolted through to at the top to the landing above, which has a big support beam going across it that holds up not only the landing but the staircase. It's that support beam that was that somehow got wet with water seeping in from above, and that water stayed in there. I believe that that piece of wood that you can see now was covered up with something else, probably either stucco or another piece of wood, so that the rot that was going on behind there wasn't visible until it failed.
So you've got managers who are not really trained to be building inspectors, basically, in associations that are supposed to be checking on things and sort of letting people know that there might be a problem there before calling in experts to check it out. You've got an apartment manager. I mean, we've got all these people, and I feel really bad for them. I'm not putting them down, but we're putting them in a position where we're expecting them to know all kinds of things that maybe we shouldn't be expecting them to know.
Well, that's exactly right. You know, property management is not, these are not facilities engineers.
No.
If you look at a big high-rise building in any downtown or any urban center, those buildings are built out of steel and glass. They're very sophisticated construction. But most importantly, they have building engineers that are on site all the time. And they constantly, I mean, our office is in a building like that,
yeah.
And there's building engineers, and they're coming around. The slightest little thing that we notice, they'll come around and they'll begin to check it out in a very professional way. Most of these condominium projects don't have on-site management, number one. They certainly don't have building engineers. And the property managers in a residential environment don't have that. They're not sophisticated in building maintenance. They have to rely on contractors and vendors and outside consultants to come in and inspect and give them recommendations. But because nobody's walking around there on a daily basis who has any real knowledge of why buildings fail, there's nobody to sound the alarm or to be put on notice that there's something to inspect further. The kind of studies that are done to create the reserve program aren't studies that open up the buildings and do structural inspections. They simply walk around and look at the condition of the paint or the condition of the roof, and they give an estimate of how long they think those visible components will last.
Right.
But nobody is looking beyond that. And unless we force them to do these inspections by appropriate legislative requirements, they're not going to do it voluntarily. They're not going to do it on their own. And so I'm hoping that this very unfortunate tragedy in Berkeley has now gotten enough attention that we can get something passed that will require the investigation that I'm talking about and give people enough notice that it's going to have to be done so they can begin to put aside the money necessary to do it when the time comes.
So we've been talking about the problems. You've got one piece of legislation that's going through that's going to require structural engineers to come in and inspect the buildings. Is there another solution? Is there something else that perhaps we should be doing, whether it's the homeowners, the apartment building owners, local municipal governments? We do pay them taxes, and they seem to have shunted all their responsibilities off onto the private sector. And the training, I mean, you make an excellent point about the fact that we just don't have the skilled trained professionals. And you talk about, and I can see this happening because I've seen it so many times over here, you talk about finding carpenters by trolling your local convenience store. Now, I know exactly what you're talking about there.
Well, I don't want to be too facetious about that because, you know, there is a lot of labor that can be done by unskilled people.
Right.
Manual labor with picks and shovels that don't require a high level of training. So a lot of that labor is casual labor that's picked up on an as-needed basis. Unfortunately, when there's a real shortage of trained people, some of that casual labor is pressed into service to do other things, even as assistants. And if you're not watching over that extremely carefully, very carefully, those untrained people, even in a support role, can be doing things that leave that building vulnerable after the outer layers are put on and covered up, and that work is covered up. So if you don't have enough trained people, you'll invariably draw help from a labor pool that is casual and untrained. And, yeah, I mentioned, you know, going by, you know, where the casual laborers hang out, and you do. They go by there, and they pick them up.
Yeah.
And they take them up and put them on the job. And a great deal of that is appropriate. I mean, that's not requires a lot of skill. But some of it does require skill. And if you need to go there to get skilled labor, then we don't have enough trained people to go around, and we need to do something about it.
If I were a developer and the buildings that I built, and I ended up with a reputation for having some really shoddily built buildings that collapsed, that failed, that had all kinds of problems, I think I would probably want to make sure that I did something about it. I don't think that I would want to be known for putting out junk.
Well, I can tell you what we see being done. Now, first of all, I think that in most cases, developers insist on contractors who are A, properly licensed, B, have adequate insurance, and maybe they've worked within the, and probably they've worked in the, within the past, and they've done decent work. But what the developer does mostly is insure itself against claims like the ones I bring, and while that might pay for it after the fact, meanwhile, we have a building that is not built in a quality way. So we're kind of closing the barn after the horse got out, to quote an old phrase. And I think that, again, we need to go back to how this happens in the first place. We need more inspection. We need better trained people. And we need to have developers who are willing to compete on quality and not just on price.
I think that's a very valid point. How do we educate housing consumers maybe to look and demand quality? Is that something that we need to be talking about as well?
It's very difficult for a person buying a unit in a multifamily building to know the condition of that building, whether they're buying a new unit or an old one. It's very difficult for an individual to be able to understand the condition of that entire project. And of course, it's the condition of the entire project, not just one unit, that they will have to be part of the funding for as time goes on. Very hard for that individual to assess the quality on their own. Even with a single family home, it's possible to hire a building inspector or an engineer who can look at that home, review the plans, do some testing, because it's a small enough unit and they can get their arms around the entirety of it. But in a big project, 100, 200, 400 units, It is impossible for the buyer of one unit to know how well that building is built. They can't know. Management doesn't know. And unfortunately, I don't think the developers always know, because we discover things later that should have been found in the construction process but weren't. I think that cities somehow need to find the funding to do more. I am not hopeful that they will. I think that developers ought to be able to get properly trained people to build their buildings for them. And I'm sure they're trying. They don't like to get sued by people like me at all, because it's a big problem for them. Their insurance now is costing them millions of dollars on a big project just to buy it. They don't like it. It hurts their reputation because people find out who's getting sued. I mean, the builder who built this apartment in Berkeley, his reputation is now in shreds because the press has picked up on it. They've researched other projects where he's been sued. And there's a huge outcry about that builder.
That's what I was talking. That was my question. You know, when I said if I were a builder, a developer, that's not what I would want. That's not the reputation I would want. So would it make more sense to put a little more money into building it slower rather than millions of dollars in insurance premiums and then having to face all kinds of litigation, as you said?
Well, I believe that builders, especially big corporate builders, are very good at determining the tipping point between spending money and making a profit. They can analyze what gets them a return on their investment and what the cost of that building is, and even factoring in insurance, if it's cheaper to build it quickly, cut corners, do what we affectionately call value engineering in order to keep the price low and be able to sell it at a price point that makes them a profit, then that's what they're going to do. Until the insurance gets to such a level, or until they can't get insurance at all, I think it's always going to be the accountants that are deciding how to build the buildings and not the builders.
With this legislation, the buildings, the associations, or the building owners are going to hire a structural engineer. How often?
Well, we've said every 5 years. It could be seven. Okay, so might go for seven.
What other legislation, and how do you enforce that?
Oh, they have to have the results of that investigation have to be included in the reserve study, for one thing. We haven't decided whether they should file the results of that with a local public entity, but maybe. That's one thought, that they, every 7 years, that report gets filed with the building department. We're also saying that it has to be done on new construction before they can sell their first unit.
Oh.
So that, you know, that catches it in the beginning to the extent it can. So I think enforcement may happen simply because these engineers are going to be looking at these buildings. They're not going to hide anything. They're going to put this in a report. And as long as that report has to go to some public agency, the public agency won't be able to ignore those. So I think it will be, I think now the problem's going to be, what if they find something really bad in an older building? And we have a number of examples of this where we're talking about millions of dollars in repair costs. What is going to happen then? Well, if the public entity or, you know, the building department knows about the problem because these reports are now filed with them, they're going to insist those repairs be done. If those repairs aren't done, then they're going to do what I said earlier. They're going to red tag the building, and people won't be able to use it. So it's going to be crunch time, and people are going to have to understand the ramifications of having these buildings sitting there with this kind of damage in them and not doing anything about it. I'm not going to be the most popular person in my industry by supporting this. However, a lot of the industry professionals that I've talked to think it's way overdue. They're very supportive, but of course they're not the ones that are going to pay for it. And when the owners begin to understand not just the cost of the investigation, but the cost of repairing what the investigation produces or discovers, I think, you know, there's going to be some very unhappy people. But I think that's a risk that I'm willing to take, because the alternative is tragic and bad.
Well, yeah, you have the six people who died when the balcony collapsed, and the other gentleman who died when the staircase collapsed. I mean, that's
right.
You know, and
there are more across the country, and we're going to produce that, and I will publish that on my blog once I get that tied down. I just think the Berkeley thing just was bad, so bad, that now it's gotten national attention, which it should get, but will also give us the ability to get some things introduced into the legislature that we might get passed that will make these buildings safer.
Any other potential legislation that you can think of?
Well, there is also another bill that's already been introduced, and it's going to require one of the big outcries here about this company that built that building in Berkeley was that they'd been sued multiple times and had reached settlements in other cases which weren't disclosed or were confidential. And most all of these settlements that are done without a trial are confidential. The builders and their insurance companies wouldn't settle them if I could turn around and go to the newspaper and talk about them. So they're always on a conditional confidentiality. What this other piece of legislation does, and I didn't write it, somebody else did, is require all construction settlements, defect settlements, to be filed with the building department so that anybody could see them, and also the contractor's state license board.
And that
would be considered in determining whether the contractor could get his license renewed. It wouldn't affect developers, because developers aren't licensed by the contractor's license board, but the contractors they use would be affected. So that's another piece of legislation that's now just been introduced. I'm a little concerned about it, because I think that it will make insurance companies and contractors reluctant to settle these cases out of court, because of the consequences that this bill would require.
But if it went to court, it would be, if it didn't settle, it would go to court, and then it would be public knowledge.
Correct. And that will make it very difficult for us to settle these cases on behalf of the owners and get them the money they need without putting through the risk of a trial. And a trial is risky for both sides. And frankly, an out-of-court settlement is usually the most effective resolution. If we deny our clients that ability to settle out of court, I think we're not going to be necessarily doing the consumer a big favor. I haven't looked at it close enough. It just got introduced, and I'm looking at it. But that's another approach that someone has come up with that I'm just not sure about.
Tyler, thank you so very much for joining us today. I hope you'll be back, and it would be interesting to find out what happens with the legislation. I wish you good luck with that. And I hope I hope you'll be back sometime. Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.